Good afternoon, everybody. How are you guys doing today? It is Wednesday, March 16th. You guys are listening to this broadcast. Welcome to Radio Laurier News at Noon. You already know the drill. My name's Jeffrey. I'm here with Rajni. Fatima has an exam today, so she couldn't make it, but we're still going to give you some quality content. And yeah, welcome to the show.
Yeah, so first we'll start off with our usual COVID, weekly COVID update. As you may have known, we eased up the vaccine passport mandates as well as capacity limits for most public locations. And next week, Monday, will be the we'll see the end of the mask mandate on a federal level. However, provinces can still enforce it if they so choose. And individual cities can also enforce it if they want. So I think Waterloo region itself has been considering to keep the mandate in place in secondary and elementary schools, just because of some pushback from parents that they've received, especially if parents whose children are unable to get vaccinated, like the kids under 5 in daycares and so on. Also people who are like immunocompromised or have to take care of their elderly relatives and stuff have been kind of pushing back against the easing of that mask mandate, because although about 90% of us are vaccinated and everything, there's still some people among us who live with like very high risk situations. So also another thing that kind of may be something to detract from the celebration that we would feel from having masks taken away is that the chief medical officers and the medical professionals and the science board were not consulted before this instruction was given. So basically the politicians have just told us that, hey, you're not going to have to wear masks anymore, yay, but the medical people and the scientists were like, wait, you guys didn't tell us about this, like, what do you mean? So it's like, it's very clear that this is kind of like a election tactic, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, you could read it that way for sure, just like the removal of restrictions and so on. Because I think, like, lots of people think that because of all this stuff is going back to normal, we're kind of finished with the pandemic, but it's not quite finished yet. Like, I mean, we still have a significant caseload. It's just that a lot of us are not, it's not that we're getting seriously ill, but people still can get seriously ill. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we still have to be mindful of that. Like, even though things are slowly returning back to normal, and you could argue that it's kind of getting to a, what do they call it, the endemic stage at this point, it's still important to be cautious and considerate of people who may not have like a very strong immune system or who may not be able to get vaccinated. So, wow. Yeah.
Wow.
I feel like I hate wearing masks because I wear glasses and it always fogs up my glasses. And then also sometimes if you walk fast and stuff, the mask gets wet and it's just really gross.
Yeah.
But I feel like I may still wear them in general. Like, I think school definitely forces you have to wear them. But I may just wear them because, like, I don't really trust people around these days. And I mean, I don't know. Sometimes it just helps to not have your whole face visible. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't look good that day, you can just cover it.
Wait. What was the date that you said? You said the 24th?
21st.
21st.
Mm-hmm. That's next week, Monday.
And, oh, wow. Yeah, I can't lie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm probably, I want to say I'm going to keep wearing my mask, but, like, I'm probably not, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, no, it depends. It really depends on the place. Like, if I'm going somewhere, like a grocery store with, like, a bunch of old people.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to wear it for them kind of thing.
But if
I'm walking into like a whatever, I don't know, like a restaurant or something, like, honestly, because my thing with masks is like I'm a heavy smoker, so like I cannot breathe basically especially when I'm walking, so it's hard to breathe. So I don't know, I'm very, it's so, yeah. Who do we trust when the medical people are like, no?
Haven't been consulted about something like this, you know?
I know. But honestly, I feel like it was, I don't know, I feel like it was about time that they tried it out. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work, we all know what's going to happen. And if it does work, then yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's just, I don't know. Like, I don't like them, but at the same time, I'm not like violently opposed to wearing them. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, okay, like, I think for me personally, I'll wear it in a situation, like, as you said, where you're going to be around people who may be at risk, and especially at school too, because although we're all students, like, the profs are older.
Yeah,
they may be caring for relatives and so on, and like, some students are living at home, so definitely for that. But like, if I were to forget to bring my mask, I wouldn't panic, most likely. Like, you know, I wouldn't be too stressed about forgetting it. But that's just for Ontario, though. I believe Quebec is still gonna have it required on, so they're like a week or so behind us, so their vaccine passport thing is becoming nullified either this week or next week, and for them the mask will still be required on public transport until I think the end of April, like the 27th of April or so on. So
I see.
Yeah, so it's just a very like individualistic approach, I think, from each province. Like, each province is basically just doing what they feel is best for them, and it's not really a unified thing. So yeah, we'll see how this works out in the next month or so.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then also kind of related to the COVID stuff is, has anyone, the prices of gas and everything going up? And one thing that particularly stuck out to me this week when I went grocery shopping is that butter is so expensive now. Like, you used to be able to get the biggest brick, I think that's like a pound of butter, for like $3.99 if you buy like no-name butter, right?
Yeah.
And I went to the store today and no-name butter is literally $5.99.
What?
Like, what the heck?
Why?
$5.99 for a pound of butter. Because, okay, I was reading up on it. I literally Googled, why is butter so expensive? And apparently there is something to do with the Canadian dairy farming industry.
Yeah.
Where the farmers have a certain quota. And then the thing is, the supply is severely limited because Canada doesn't import dairy products. And I think it takes like 9 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of butter. So it consumes a lot of the milk. And then by the time they allot like the amount of milk for like drinking milk and then processing and other things like milk powder, ice cream, there's not that much left over for the butter. Okay.
That makes sense.
Then there's like no way for them to bring in more because they can't import. And then also just a bunch of bureaucratic processes are in place that make it difficult for the farmers to negotiate properly with the people they supply to. So like the article I read had someone from Chapman's Ice Cream saying that the Chapman's people give the supermarkets a price because they get quoted a price from the farmers. But the price that they get quoted from the farmers happens before the actual yield of milk comes. So the farmer has no real way of knowing like how much profit he's going to make from that.
Yeah.
And so sometimes, actually quite a lot of the time, they end up selling their products at a loss, which is kind of obviously bad for the Canadian milk farming industry in general. Hmm. But like, the thing is, people would argue that they should open trade to accept U.S. milk. And to accept like imported milk instead of having these heavy duties on it to discourage that type of importation. But I wonder if there's any, like, I'm not a farming expert, obviously, but I wonder if there's any reason why we can't just improve the quantity of Canadian milk. Like, is there not enough land or?
Yeah, it's weird.
I would really love to know that, because like, if you're having a shortage of milk, I feel like Canadian food standards are a lot higher than the US.
Yeah,
as sure. To what I've researched, so I wouldn't want to have like U.S. milk coming into the Canadian supply, because I mean, like, as a lactose intolerant person, I do not react well to milk, but Canadian milk is like one of the few milks that I can drink, you know.
Really?
Yeah, like, what? When I even milk at home, like Jamaican milk, when I used to drink a lot of milk, I used to break out.
Really?
Yeah, but when I came to Canada, I was drinking like Canadian milk. And it doesn't upset my stomach as much, and it doesn't like make me break out. So
that's so weird.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
It's crazy. But it's like, Canadian milk is like really good quality milk, you know, like Canadian farm products are generally really good quality. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the solution is to decrease the quality by bringing in like stuff from outside that we can't control and we can't quality check.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know what? That makes sense, because I know, like, I think we all know, like, at least, like, 3 people who are, quote-unquote, lactose.
Mm-hmm.
But yet still eat, like, pizza and ice cream and, like, whatever.
Of course.
And just never seem to, like, have, like, a major issue. And
it's not major enough to, like, dictate my life.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, I'll still eat my pizza, my lasagna, my pasta, all of that. But, like, I just hate drinking milk as a drink. Like, I don't like that. Yeah. But, I mean, I feel like when I'm in Canada, I don't have to, like, control how much milk I drink or, like, how many milk products I consume, because it doesn't really have that negative effect on me.
True, true. You know what I'm wondering? If this has anything to do with the, like, what we're talking about with the Canadian dairy industry? I'm wondering if there's, like, a significant portion of people, like, turning to, like, vegan, or, like, not even vegan, just, like, alternative milk, soy, because I only drink soy milk, I'm lactose or anything, just because I don't know, like, I just rather, it's not even like it tastes better, it's just like,
yeah,
something about milk like freaks me out when I don't know, it's weird. But
that could be it, because I think we've seen a push towards more plant-based foods nowadays, and like there's like plant-based cheese now too.
Yeah,
and I feel like, yeah, like people are kind of stepping away from milk as being promoted as a healthy food, because I mean milk is like not that good for you if you think about it. Like full fat milk is probably one of the best milks that you can have, but milk has lactose and lactose is a sugar. So if you're supposed to be on a low sugar diet, you shouldn't be really drinking milk.
Yeah.
And then like the thing is, people obviously with like asthma problems and sinus problems, the reason why I didn't drink a lot of milk as a kid was because I had asthma and it would really affect my like mucus production and so on. Sorry, that's kind of gross to say on the air, but like it aggravated my asthma. So I think a lot of people probably have come to realize that milk is not necessarily the healthiest thing to be drinking. Like, but it's a food same way. Like you shouldn't just, I don't know, unless you have like an allergy, a severe allergy, I don't think you should, that milk should be demonized as such, but I don't think that it's wrong necessarily to step away from seeing it as a health food, because it's definitely not a health food.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Well, guys, now we all know a little bit more about milk. And
yeah, and why butter is so expensive. And then on top of that, like that connects to how gas is so expensive too, because like cold storage trucks and transportation are going to cost more now. So it's like, inflation is affecting all the steps of that supply chain for dairy products. So yeah, guys, it's time, probably we'll start to see people using more margarine and like butter substitutes, because at this point it's like prohibitive to buy butter.
See, I've always been a margarine person simply because it's easier to spread.
Oh, I get you.
That's like butter obviously tastes better, but like
the fake not one having more to like leave it out and like
Exactly.
I don't know, I don't like the taste of margarine at all. Like I love butter. Butter is amazing, like for cake and everything, there's no substitute for butter.
Honestly I agree. Mm-hmm. Well, there you have it. Should I go on to international now?
Sure, perfect.
Okay, I'm gonna start out with something that's like, I'm going to put a little trigger warning. It's somewhat disturbing, but I feel like it needs a little bit of attention just because with the whole Ukraine situation, there's definitely been a bit of oversaturation in the news just in terms of anything else. Kind of it's really hard to find it among the constant headlines. Don't get me wrong. Like the Ukraine crisis is a full-scale disaster. Like it is it's a global disaster, as we all know. And for people who wonder, like, why it gets more coverage than, say, the conflict in Ethiopia or whatever, is because obviously there's honestly racist components, but I think the main part is just that it has global consequences, as we're seeing with gas prices, as we're seeing with inflation, as we're seeing with, like, the potential of nuclear conflict. You know, there's just all these little things that I do understand why it's there's so much of it in the news, but we here at Radio Laurier are I guess you would say an alternative news source. And yeah, so I'm going to talk about the Ethiopia conflict, actually, and which it's literally been going on since I remember we first started covering it, and I think it was
two years ago. I remember you brought that up as well.
Yeah, it was like November of 2020, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's still going on, and it's getting little to no coverage because it's like an ethnic civil war. So basically it's the different tribes in Ethiopia are kind of ganging up on the Tigray tribe, because I won't get into like the whole politics because it's very complicated. If anyone wants to know the full backstory, look it up, it's easy to find. But yeah, basically it's just a bunch of ethnic groups are sort of ganging up on the Tigray ethnic group, and they're being backed by the military, the people who are ganging up on the Tigray ethnic group.
Yeah.
And, so there was a video posted on social media today, that showed armed men burning a man to death in Western Ethiopia. And this is nothing compared to all the different things that have been happening. But I just found this headline. This is the first Ethiopian headline I found in the mainstream news in a long time. And so basically, 11 people, including 9 ethnic Tigrayans, were killed on March 3rd in the Metekel zone. And it's because of waves of ethnic violence, civil war. So there's a clip, a 5-minute video, which emerged on social media. It shows more than 50 armed men, including people from the National Ethiopian Army, like the actual army of Ethiopia's government, are seen carrying a man in plain clothes towards a charred, burnt-out heap. And then they throw him on and just, boom, set him on fire.
Wow.
And it's just like, man, you just really feel... You really feel for the people of Ethiopia. Obviously not the soldiers, who are crazy on both sides. It's not like the Tigrayan soldiers aren't doing similar things to their enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just so sad, because it's a tribal conflict between like ethnic minorities ethnic tribes in Ethiopia, all sort of just, you know what I mean, ganging up on one another because of ethnic lines.
Yeah.
It's just so disturbing, and who knows? And what, like, it just amazes me that the Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed, he won a Nobel Peace Prize in 2019. He won a Nobel Peace Prize in 2019. Wow. And here we are. But yeah, I thought I'd just bring that up just so people don't forget that, you know, everything that's happening in Ukraine is also happening Ethiopia, Myanmar, many other parts of the world. Don't forget about their struggle, because I feel like a lot of people are almost assuming that this is like the only conflict going on.
Yeah.
But don't get me wrong, like, what is going on, as I said, in Ukraine is a disaster, like an actual disaster. Like, what Russia is doing in Ukraine is I'm not gonna say unbelievable, because I saw it coming, but it is just, they're wrecking the country, they're wrecking the people, they're wrecking the culture. And yeah, it's a lot. But speaking of Ukraine, I might as well talk
about it. Good that you mentioned racism and how these type of conflicts are portrayed. Because I'm not sure if you had seen a couple of weeks ago, people like, important people, news figures, were coming on screen and talking about how it's so shocking that this is happening to, literally, as I quote, blonde hair, blue-eyed Europeans.
Yeah.
You know, as if it's like assumed that people of color or people from the global south deserve conflict because they look different, or if it's like normalized for them because they look different. And then on top of that, well, obviously being in a time of war and turmoil is traumatic for everybody concerned. It's not an excuse for them to deny foreigners in Ukraine the opportunity to escape, because like at the end of the day, like, this is none of their business. They were just there to study or to work or to do whatever.
Yeah.
And there have been multiple incidences of immigrants from Africa and Asia and the Middle East as well being denied access to the evacuation at the border and like staying outside in the wintertime cold, like waiting to be helped and waiting to be allowed to leave. Yeah. And I actually, not personally, but like secondhand, lots of students in Jamaica go to Russia and Ukraine to do medical school because it's a lot cheaper than doing it at home.
Yeah.
And so one of my friends knew someone who was actually stuck in Ukraine and was not being allowed to leave because he was not Ukrainian, you know?
Yeah.
And they had apparently appealed to the Jamaican consulate for help. And the response was very underwhelming, I would say. It's like there was not, and they were not given any support. They were not given any like emergency funds. And then finally what they were offered was like a student loan to leave, like to cover their travel expenses to leave, which is like, I don't understand how you could assume that that's an appropriate response, because you literally are making them pay back money that you're giving them to save their lives and to escape a war zone.
Yeah.
Which to me, that doesn't make any sense. So, I mean, it's obviously not that the Ukrainians' plight is any worse, but it's important to keep in mind that just because this war is happening and the whole world is kind of like showing support for Ukraine, it doesn't mean that other issues like racism and xenophobia have like suddenly stopped existing.
Yeah.
You know, like even in the face of a war, when they would want people to be empathetic towards them, they're still like perpetuating these racist ideas and racist practices of not allowing people to leave or not allowing people to get to safety just because they look different. So
yeah, honestly, yeah, that's what people would like forget a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna say there's like a huge like ultra-right nationalist presence in Ukraine, but there is mm-hmm. like a significant one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And they played a decent role in the coup in 2014 that ousted Yanukovych.
Yeah.
So there is like, obviously the average Ukrainian is not racist. I don't think I have any place to say that, but there is elements to it. That people seemingly just brush over or forget. And Poland is a very nationalistic country, as I'm sure a lot of people know. Like, there's been many videos coming out of Polish like ultra nationalist like protesters, basically like assaulting people of color, trying to just get out of their country. You know, they're just trying to go home. It's not even like they're gonna stay in Poland.
Exactly.
So, no, it is important to acknowledge that. Yeah, that is a huge thing, you know. And it's not just like specific to Ukraine. Honestly, every conflict, every country in the world, there's elements of racism for sure, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is like especially prominent, just because there's been the videos, there's been all these students out there saying this and that, and there's been a weirdly small amount of coverage on it. But hey, I get it. But I guess I have one more point I can say for the show today. And this is less, I guess, news and more sort of opinion, not really opinion, but more just discussion about the whole conflict. So I'm going to start out by saying basically everything I'm about going to say right now is the ideas are taken from a lecture by John Mearsheimer.
Mm-hmm.
And John Mearsheimer, he's an American political scientist and international relations scholar. And he belongs to the realist school of thought. And I recommend everybody and anybody listening, go on YouTube, search up Why Ukraine is the West's Fault.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a lecture that at this point, I think it has 25 million views. I viewed it like the first couple of days of the conflict, it only had 5 million views. So in like a month, it has went up like 20 million views or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of his, basically what he's saying, He is a very his opinion is very contrary to what you're going to see in the media, what you're going to be taught in school. But his sort of whole opinion, which I wholeheartedly agree with, is that this whole Ukraine situation is not Russia's fault. Not to say they're not doing committing atrocities and destroying the country, but what caused them to get to this point is without a doubt NATO and the West and America's fault. And let me just briefly explain, because honestly, if you got anyone wants to listen to the lecture, he amazing speaker, very eloquent, very simplified. He simplifies the conflict, not like simplifies it, but he explains it in a simple way so that you can follow it easily. Basically, the point is Russia has been saying essentially since 2008. In 2008, they invaded Georgia because Georgia was promised membership into NATO. And so basically, since 2008, Russia has been making it unequivocally clear that Ukraine and basically all like any of the countries that currently aren't part of NATO that border Russia, but notably Ukraine, can never join NATO. Like, they made it unequivocally clear Ukraine can never join NATO. And don't
I
get me wrong.
remember.
People are gonna come with the counter argument. Oh, shouldn't Ukraine have their own say? Yes, in a perfect world, Ukraine should have their own say. But we are not living in a perfect world. We live far from a perfect world. We live in a world where the most powerful countries dominate. Look at China, America. I wouldn't say Russia is like a dominant country, but they are a large country and they have the world's largest nuclear arsenal. So we're living like this is not a perfect world, is what I'm trying to say. And Ukraine had was basically led on by the West, by America, who are saying, yes, we support you, come join NATO, come join NATO. And you know, it kept happening. There was the 2014 annexation of Crimea, there was a civil war in the Donbass, there was all this Russian buildup on the Ukrainian border. And then finally, Putin just not I wouldn't even say Putin, because I truly do believe a number of different Russian leaders would have done the same thing. They, because Ukraine is an existential threat to Russia if it joins NATO. And again, I'm not trying to say I agree with like this whole sort of idea of, oh, we need to stay powerful, we can't have any threats, blah, 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 blah. But it's reality. That is the world we live in. That is how international politics work. That is how geopolitics work. That's how countries interact with one another. And my point is just to say, Ukraine and the West had every chance to sort of just let Ukraine stay neutral and avoid this situation. And Ukraine was led on by the West. The West kept saying, Biden, Trump, you know, we're going to arm you, we're going to bring you into NATO, blah, blah, blah. Excuse me, all of this and that. And then, yeah, it's just, and then now look where we are. You go onto the media, everyone is saying, oh, Putin is horrible. Don't get me wrong, Putin is not a good guy. Like, anyone can say that. I think everything he's doing is horrible. But you can't leave out the West's sort of fault in this
Yeah,
situation because
that's
it
so
could have
true.
been easily avoided. You know what I'm saying? And yeah,
Yeah.
that's all I have to say.
And actually, now that you were mentioning that, I just saw something on LinkedIn where a worker at the Russian television station, the federal TV station, had broke onto a broadcast
I saw
and
that.
put a sign that said, "Everything they're telling you here is a lie."
I saw
And
that.
she was taken away by police, and no one has heard her. No one has heard from her since, which is very disturbing. But I mean, it's important to distinguish between like Putin and his government and the people of Russia, because I'm pretty sure the majority of people in Russia are against this war as well.
Yeah. No, yeah, honestly, like, again, like, I want to stress, I'm not in support of Russia. Not in support of the war at all. At all.
For sure.
Everything that's going on, as I've said multiple times today, is a complete and utter disaster. But all I'm trying to say is don't let the sort of quote unquote Western propaganda,
Yeah,
the
for sure.
media, sort of paint this narrative that Russia is the ultimate aggressor when Russia was never an aggressor until
the U.S. did something first.
Yeah, Ukraine was promised NATO membership regardless of, you know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. I just thought I'd put that out there.
For sure. But yeah, I think that brings us up to time, so we can close with Pierre, unless you had anything else you wanted to discuss.
No, no. Just everybody check out that lecture, John Mearsheimer, YouTube, Why West is Ukraine is the West's Fault. Great lecture. Check it out. University of Chicago. Check it out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining in, and we'll hope to see you next week. Stay safe and take care. Thank you.
Adios.